If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Take from the top. We have a very special friend here today.
This is recording one.
I'm pretty sure the previous recording we just talked about your nosebleed.
Yeah, we riffed on that a little too long. All right, everyone, catch it up. Riley's nosebleed. Okay, he ruined a sweater and maybe the chair that he's sitting in. But anyway, we're gonna turn our focus here to the one and only Joshua of House. Of House Norton.
House Norton. Yes. Hell yeah.
Who is a good friend of ours that we met while working in a lab over in Boston. If you guys have listened to a couple previous podcast episodes, we talk a lot about the Foot and Ankle Research Innovation Lab. That's where we kind of started this whole thing. And Josh was one of the founding members of the lab.
Yeah.
Yes, I founded the entire lab myself.
And by that, we mean he was one of the first people we met when we got there. And so, yeah, Josh has had a lot of experiences in his own life and in the medical world, and he's a current pre-med student,
kind of just a student of life.
pre-med student, but also, like, full-fledged engineer.
Yeah, aerospace engineer. Graduated Purdue this year.
There you go.
Yeah. Boilermakers.
Did you graduate in the fall?
I graduated in May.
Wow.
May.
Wow.
Did 5 years.
Yeah. Did my time. That's incredible. And so, yeah, we're going to have him here to chat a little bit about his undergraduate process coming from a non-typical science background into the medical application process. You're planning on submitting in June, right?
June, this upcoming cycle, yeah.
Oh, baby.
So we're in the thick of it now, huh? Where? How we feeling?
Gearing up. Yeah. I just took the MCAT. We're feeling good.
Okay.
Waiting for the scores to come back. Maybe won't feel so good.
Yeah, there's that month-long period where you're like either horrified in anxiety or just relieved to not have to think about anything.
Yeah. I'm definitely relieved.
It's like, should I start studying again? Mm-hmm. Am I safe?
Yeah, I took that test and I walked out. I go, you know what? I either did really well. Or I did horrible, but I'm going to take a month and just relax.
Yeah.
And then if I have to start studying, it'll come back.
Yeah.
You're back to full-length MCATs now, right? So it's an eight-hour...
It was like... you probably power through a practice test in like 6 hours.
Okay.
You know, you take all the breaks, you know, mm-hmm. practice what you're going to actually do.
Yeah.
Test day, like I showed up, started around 8 a.m., walked out of there like 3:30.
I remember, well, I'm assuming you had a similar MCAT process because we were during COVID.
I had a full length.
You had a full length? So mine was one of those cut, like, short length ones where it was like 5.5 or 6 hours.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and so they would give three tests throughout the day. One started at 8 a.m., one started at, like, noon, and one started at, like, 4 or 5 p.m.
Yep.
And they would kind of stagger it. Mm. And so mine didn't start until 5 p.m.
Oh, my.
And gosh. I walked out of the test at almost midnight.
That's crazy.
It was unbelievable. So I had to, like, readjust my whole sleeping schedule to where I was waking up at 2 p.m.
Well, that's me now.
Yeah.
I should have done that.
Yeah, honestly, maybe it was a good thing. I was waking up at 2 p.m. I'd study from, like, 3 until 11 p.m. And then... I guess, I don't know, like, kind of just chillax for 2 or 3 hours before going to sleep at, like, 2 a.m. And, yeah, I guess that's a pretty normal sleep schedule. Like,
pretty normal. That sounds like a dream.
But, yeah, I remember walking out at almost midnight, and I just laid in the grass outside of the building, and I was like, I don't know what just happened. Like, you know the blackout adrenaline that you get?
Yeah.
I walked out, I was like trying to think of any of the questions that I just answered. I was like, I can't remember any of those.
Imagine if the, like, police pulled or security pulled up on you. Like,
I'm just laying.
Middle of the night, just laying out there. Are you drunk?
Sir, what are you doing on the ground?
I think I would have been less coherent than if I was drunk.
Yeah.
Like, trying to answer questions.
They ask you more more MCAT questions.
Testing my sobriety based on physics equations.
I don't know if you guys had this, but I know that they include, like, practice questions in the actual MCAT.
Yeah.
Experimental mm-hmm. that don't actually count towards your score. Right. But, like, mentally, you hit one of those.
Ooh.
And you're like, this is hard. It's like, you can't get thrown off by those, though.
Yeah,
I know.
So you kind of just, like, walk out of there telling yourself, like, the ones I got wrong,
right,
don't count.
Definitely experimental.
Definitely don't count.
Well, my fear is that my brain just works completely different than a normal human being. I feel like I normally get those really hard ones right, and then the easy ones wrong.
Just drop the layups.
Yeah. No, 100% fumble the bag. And so I always get really nervous that I only answer the experimental questions right, and I answered all of the regular questions wrong. And so I'll walk out of there, I'll get like literally a zero after getting half the questions right.
That's so funny. I think a lot of the tests are adaptive too. So it's kind of like a tree in the way where it's branching off at different points for different people based on how you answer a question. If you're getting certain things right, then they'll give you a different kind of question to maybe challenge you a little bit harder. So, I think that the board's materials are like adaptive tests. Okay. I don't know about MCAT though. Yeah. I know they do that with some of the...
Sounds unfair.
I thought the MCAT was like standardized.
I think it's more standardized. They do, of course, mix up stuff just because, you know, that you never know. Like a test center could be not following the rules or something like that.
I mean, that place was like guarded more than like four
locked,
blocks.
Lockdown.
I had to do like... You know, you have fingerprints. Yeah. I have to, like, scan my palm.
Yeah.
Every single time I walked in and out, they made me take off my glasses, do the full check of the glasses. I was like, I didn't switch glasses when I walked to the bathroom and back.
Yeah.
But I guess people have gotten very tricky in how they've
tried
to cheat.
Right.
Which my thought process is, like, if you just put that amount of time into studying, that's probably be okay.
True. Yeah. But anyways, you want to talk about my undergrad experience?
Yeah, let's get back around to that.
Yeah.
Tell us just a little bit about...
Well, no, I want to hear about a little bit about high school.
High school? Yeah.
Want to hear a little bit about middle school.
Where you...
So I was born...
Do you know cursive?
I think I learned that in third grade. Interesting time for me, actually. No.
Well, where did you, like, grow up, and then maybe what made you want to go to...
Yeah. So I grew up in Seymour, Connecticut, mm-hmm. And we're in Farmington, Connecticut right now, so pretty close by. Spent my whole life in Seymour and didn't move. Went to public elementary school and middle school, mm-hmm. and my dream as a little youngling was to be a fighter pilot. Like, I really wanted to be a fighter pilot. And I'd go to air shows. There's an airport right near my grandparents' house. I'd go, like, watch the planes take off. I was obsessed. And everybody tells you, like, oh, you're never going to do what your childhood dream is. Mm. And I was like, nah, I'm going to do it.
Wrong.
But as a young kid, I knew I had asthma. And I knew that was going to be, like, the limiting factor for being in the military. Mm. I was like, oh, maybe I'll outgrow it, whatever. And I got to high school, and that's when it kind of hit me. It was like, okay, this asthma thing, probably not going to go away at this point.
Yeah.
So I really like planes. I really like all that, you know, like, space and rockets, and so I kind of got involved in robotics, and I ended up being, not to brag, but I ended up being pretty good.
A beast.
I ended up being pretty good at, like, you know, I did what was called VEX robotics. There's FIRST and then there's VEX. So I did VEX, and I went to the world competition.
Right,
and
right.
I really enjoyed, like, putting things together, like, trying to solve those kind of problems. I was like, well, if I can't be a pilot, because at that point, like, airline pilot was kind of out of the question too, I might as well do something that I'm good at, and that was, in my eyes, like, engineering. I was like, I can engineer planes. Like, if I can't fly them, I might as well build them.
Yeah.
And that was my mentality when applying to college. So I ended up applying to Purdue, who has a very good aerospace engineering program, and got accepted. And at first, I was like, I'll go somewhere else. But then that's where I ended up.
What else was on the list?
Northeastern.
Right.
UConn.
Ooh.
It was WPI, University of Notre Dame. probably just some IVs.
Of course.
Like, throw it out there. I just got to throw it out
there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I feel like as a high school student, though, I was, like, naive. And, like, oh, the prestige of the Ivy Leagues is, like, something that I need.
Yeah.
And I'm so that was why my initial thought towards Purdue was, like, oh, maybe I'll go somewhere else. It was because I was, like, oh, it, like, the name matters. And I feel like I was kind of misled just by, like, maybe society.
100%. I feel like I went through something pretty similar as well.
And, you know, in, like, retrospect, looking at it, like, don't get me wrong, they're good schools, and they're good for engineering and whatnot, but, I mean, Purdue is, like, a great engineering school.
Yeah,
like,
that's the thing.
Consistently, like, ranked up there with all these other schools and stuff.
Yep.
So I didn't realize that until I was, like, in college, and I'm so glad that I got into Purdue, and that's where I ended up going, and kind of, like, I didn't get into these other schools, because if I did, I probably would have chosen them, and then...
Yeah.
It would have been a whole different world after that.
So kind of the stick of, like, everything happens for a reason.
Absolutely. Oh, for sure. Yeah, I remember going through something relatively similar when I was applying for undergraduate as well. I was kind of knew that I wanted to go to Clemson, just because I had some family friends that went there, and growing up, I was always a fan. But then I always looked back at it, like, if I want to go to med school, I need this top of the, like, U.S. school on my resume. And you get through school and you realize people from every university end up in the medical world.
Yep.
You can end up there just as long as you choose the right path and, like, actually sit down and study and make it happen. You can go from any school to get into the medical world.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a pretty big stigma for high school students especially. And maybe it's pushed by the high school admin and just people in that world because they want you to go to the best school that you can. But you really can choose a school that you want to go to and want to live 4 years of your, like, best life at.
Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the decision is, like, a economic one too.
100%.
What makes sense for somebody to go to a school where you can commute to and you can afford and it's in state. All of that kind of makes sense.
It 100% makes sense, and it doesn't mean you have to take a hit later down the line to go with that. Like, you can still do whatever you want to do as long as you make it a priority.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Purdue is a public university, and, you know, as a high schooler, I wasn't too concerned with finances. But now, it's like, I'm very fortunate to be in the position I am now, you know, instead of being in mountains of debt because... I wanted a certain name at the top of my diploma, which I think we still all ended up with, but
yeah, I think we're fortunate.
We're all fortunate, but
yeah. And I noticed that you have a Rolex on right now as you say all that.
Yeah, by the way,
I came into some money.
Yeah, was that your Porsche 911 out front?
I parked it next to your Lambo. Yeah.
Oh my God, what a world that would be.
Yeah, right. Well, okay, so you get to Purdue.
So I get to Purdue, yeah.
And what'd you think initially you were going to major in? Was it aerospace already?
So I was at the time torn because at this point I was still gung-ho about, okay, I'm going to be an engineer, whatever. And I didn't know if I wanted to do mechanical or aerospace because, like I said, like, planes and rockets is what I'm passionate about. But realistically, like, mechanical, I can go out and do anything with. Like, I'll kind of be, like, jack of all trades, master of none. No offense to mechanical engineering. So at school, there's some, like, you know, bickering between the different engineering majors.
Wait, that's so, like, so nerdy.
Absolutely. It's always fun. It is so nerdy. One of my good friends came up with nicknames for each of, like, the engineering specialties. And so, like, they all have abbreviations. So, like, mechanical is ME. So we kind of called them the miscellaneous engineers.
Ah, okay.
And then Aero was AAE. So we call it, well, he called us the arrogant engineers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
And then, like, electrical and computer, called them the pixie wranglers. You know, those type of things.
That is very nerdy, but very funny.
Your first year, at least at Purdue, is, like, just general engineering. And then you have to actually, like, I guess, you know, keep medical terminology. You got to kind of, like, match into your program. You have to get accepted into the engineering specialty you want to be.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So at the end of it, I was like, you know what? If I'm going to go for it, I might as well go for it. I put Arrow at my top. Like, this is the one I want to be in. And I got in. So that was the start of my sophomore year. I started aerospace engineering. And then sophomore year is also when I decided that maybe I want to go to med school.
Oh, my gosh, dude.
Yeah.
Naturally, that's how things progress.
Naturally, that's the progression.
I think the first joke I made to you was, like, are you going to deliver medications by rocket or something? Like, what's your plan here?
Well, you could be. So, okay, so obviously every few months I go online and do one of those specialty, what specialty am I going to be test. Uh-huh. And I consistently get aerospace medicine.
Ooh.
So this is something for you.
No, that is something.
Yeah.
I know we're at UConn Med right now, but there's actually a program out in Colorado.
Yeah.
Where it's a 1+4 program. The 1 year program is a master's in aerospace engineering, and then the 4 years is your MD.
Wait, that's awesome.
And Colorado is very good at, like, bioastronautics.
Interesting.
So
I didn't know that. What's yeah. Is it CU?
Yeah, it's CU.
Oh, wow.
I'm pretty sure it's
interesting. CU.
That's very cool.
Anyway, yeah, there is a field for space doctors.
There is a field for space doctors.
If we can overcome this asthma thing, sooner or later there will be a cure. I hope. Maybe.
Maybe.
Lung
probably
transplant.
Not, but.
So, all right. So you're like halfway through. You start to think about medical school.
Right.
So did you have any overlap in classes already? Like prereqs?
So as a pre-med student, you have to do like these certain classes, right? You know, you have to get your physics, you have to get your math, and then you have your chemistry, biology, biochemistry, organic chemistry. So I already had physics.
Yeah.
Clearly. Like, that was taken care of.
Way past it.
That was in sophomore year high school.
I was almost done with chemistry at that point. And I started to see a mentor. Because I could not handle all of this by myself.
Oh, of course not.
I don't think anybody can handle this by themselves.
No, I knew that I wanted to go to med school, and I had like 4 different advisors helping me because I didn't know what I was doing still.
But I came to the advisor or the mentor, and it was actually like I was overwhelmed by school, like, you know, burnout. Like, is this really what I want to do with my life? Is this even possible to do? And it was a very hard time for me, but luckily I went to see this mentor. Her name was Lori, and I was like, "Hey, am I crazy for wanting to do this?" And she's like, "No, not at all. Like, if this is what you want to do, we can do it." And she kind of said, "Like, these are different paths. You can try to do everything at once, or you can finish your aerospace degree in 4 years, like you want, or however long it takes, and then." Take an extra year and do your pre-med stuff. And that's, I was like, you know what? I'm already stressed enough as it is. There's no sense in taking on more. So I was like, I'll finish Aero. And the way it works is as soon as you finish your last class, you have to graduate. So I kind of just held a random class, like a random gen ed. And then my 5th year was nice and leisurely-ish with pre-med, you know?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I finished all of engineering and then pre-med.
You get to take a victory lap with that. Like, it sounds like a 2-for-1 deal.
You know, by that time, by your 5th year of college, you kind of figure out how to study.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
how the game works.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed, you know, the pre-med classes. It was a nice little breath of fresh air.
Yeah, definitely.
So what kind of made you start to think away from aerospace and into the medical field? Because that's a pretty drastic change-up.
I agree. Yeah. So did my parents. Yeah. And so did everybody else in my life. So my senior year of high school, actually, this is probably around the time you're applying to college as a high school senior. My grandma went in for heart surgery. It was, I don't want to use the word routine, but it wasn't like a surprise thing. Like, you know, she had been seeing the doctor for a while, and then they decided that she needed surgery. In surgery, they found something called cardiomyopathy, which could be genetic. And at that same time, I had looked down in the shower, and I saw, like, this lump in my groin area. And I was like, that doesn't look right. So I pushed it in, and then it came back out. And I was like, interesting. and my mom is a nurse in urology. Okay. So I kind of went downstairs and I was like, take a look at this. And she's like, that's a hernia. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. So I met with the urologist, whatnot. And after my grandma was found to have cardiomyopathy, my mom, being the nurse she was, said, hey, probably shouldn't go to surgery until you get tested for cardiomyopathy. It's like, fair point. So fall of my senior year, I went to Yale and they did an echocardiogram on me. And I should have known something was up after the tech left and another tech came. And then that tech left. And then the doctor came
in. Dude, that is...
And so I was kind of just in this room. And now the doctor's there.
Not knowing what's going on. Yeah, all of a sudden.
And my sister had just gotten the same test done right before me. And I kind of saw her go in and come out. I was like, okay, that's approximately how long it should take. And I'm like, we're now like triple the time.
Yeah.
So I'm like... kind of freaking out, but not really. I go back out into the room, and the doctor walks in, and he sits down, and he draws the diagram of the heart on the table, and he goes, so, you have four valves in your heart, the aortic, the mitral, the tricuspid, and the pulmonary. Out of those four, three of your valves are severely prolapsed, that being the aortic valve, the mitral valve, and the tricuspid valve. He goes, the worst is the aortic valve. He goes, it's like, how has nobody noticed this before? Hmm. Type of deal. He said, we don't know what to do with your case right now. I guess cardiology meets on Friday or whatever. And he said, we'll discuss it then and then get back to you. And so I drove home that day.
Oh my God.
As a high school senior. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, like what?
Like, I don't know.
Drop that info bomb on us and then just say, we'll get back to you.
Were you 18?
I was 17.
You're 17 years old.
17 years old. And I did not grasp the full weight of that at all.
How could you?
Friday rolls around, get a phone call, and Yale Cardiology said, we don't know, but we're going to send you up to Boston because Boston has, you know, they can do more tests and whatnot.
Yep.
So I went to Boston Children's around the winter time. And had an MRI of my heart, all this. And then I met with a geneticist. They did a full genome workup on me. We were told that the genetic results weren't going to come back until like June. But out of the other tests, basically they said to me, this needs to be fixed. Mm-hmm. We don't know the cause, but this needs to be fixed. Because if it's not fixed, it's not going to be good. So, picked a date for surgery. I will always remember March 7th forever. And so that was the scheduled date. And I went up there, went into surgery. I was supposed to have a very special procedure where they take the pericardium of the heart and repair your aortic valve. At this point, I'm under anesthesia, so I have no idea what's happening.
Yeah.
So all this is from what I hear from my parents. Apparently, after about 8 hours, the surgeon came out and said, I can leave it how it is, but you'll be back here in like 3 weeks. He goes, you're very lucky to have done this surgery when you are, because I've never seen a valve in this shape. Apparently, my valve was like if you take a piece of paper, you put it in a shredder, and you pull it out.
Wow.
The leaflets were completely torn. He had repaired the mitral tricuspid valve by tying them to rings to pull them close together. So they're not prolapsed anymore. But he could not repair the aortic valve. So I guess my parents and him came to the conclusion that it needs to be replaced. And so they put in a bioprosthetic valve. Yeah, and then I was capped out for like 3 days. And when I woke up, I asked, you know, what day is it and what happened? Did everything go as planned? And it's hard to sit there when you wake up from surgery, you're awake, and have someone tell you like, no, it didn't go as planned. You were fighting for your life, and we weren't sure. And it's like, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm only 17 at the time. I don't know what to make of that. Recovery was hard. You know, the day I woke up, they're like, we need you to walk. I think it took me a couple hours to even take two steps. And I saw the look on my grandfather's face like, just how much it hurt him to see me. And that, I used that as kind of motivation the next day to get out of bed and walk. But recovery was hard, and I'm better for it, but none of the mental side of, like, going through that kind of surgery set in until sophomore year of college.
Yeah.
But the genetic results came back, and I have a very rare genetic mutation. It's X-linked. So, you know, it's lethal to most males. Yep. And the doctors who discovered the gene are actually some of my doctors at Boston, which I'm very lucky to be this close to Boston.
Yeah.
So I go up there, and I guess they do research, which is kind of cool, but also kind of scary. So, and my mom carries it, and my mom had a miscarriage before me, which kind of explains all that. And then it also explains the asthma, and everything ties into this mutation.
Right.
So after, you know, I turned 18 that summer, I was like, I kind of get like a second time at life. Well, actually 2 weeks later after the first surgery, I started bleeding internally, and the blood clots compressed my heart, and I had to be rushed to the hospital. And I was supposed to be transported by helicopter to Boston, but it was snowing, and they had to open me up again. That was scary night number two, because I also did not think I was going to make it out of that night. But I didn't really reconcile with all that until sophomore year, which is when I started thinking to myself, like, all right, why have I kind of been rejected from the dreams I've had of being a pilot? Why did I have to go through, you know, almost, well, why did I have to fight for my life twice? And all of this, like, am I trying to be told something here, whether you want it to be, you know, religion, like God or the universe, whatever you want to attribute it to? I just started asking myself, like, why me? I was like, maybe this is some type of calling for me. Because when I was sitting there in the hospital after the second surgery, my incision opened up and I started to bleed. And I panicked because I was like, is this going to be round number three? Like, I don't know if I can do this a third time. I did this twice and I'm like shaking. And a resident actually came into the room and she tried to calm me down and she couldn't. And then she finally sat down next to me and she pulled down her shirt and she had her own chest scar from heart surgery she had. And she said, listen, like, I've been where you are and I know it's gonna be okay. And that part blew me away. I was able to relax, but like take comfort in knowing that someone else had been through what I've been through. And she's now helping me. So sophomore year, I was like, this is something I need to at least try to do because I want to be able to help people like me. And that's when I went to go meet with the mentor. I was like, am I crazy for wanting to do this? Should I change my major, this and that? And the answer was no. This is something I'm passionate about. I'm gonna major in something I'm passionate about and I'm still gonna pursue medicine. And I feel like I'm better for it because now I have problem solving skills. So maybe one day when I'm in a chest cavity and something goes wrong, like it did with me, it's not just memorization, it's problem solving skills.
Mm. I love that. Oh my God. Especially that last line, because that it really is a lot of what it comes down to in biology and a lot of the sciences is memorizing facts. And it takes a whole different way of thinking to get out of a situation that you're not memorize step for step in, right? Like, so that really is not only an unbelievable story on your end, but an unbelievable takeaway. I really do think, like, all jokes aside, and you being one of our good friends, I really do think you're going to make an unbelievable physician one day because of all this, if you do continue to pursue this.
It's just that desire to do what that resident, she's probably a doctor now, I hope she is. Yeah. to
it's
do
a long residence.
To do what she did for me. And I have here and there, you know, I volunteered before COVID. I used to volunteer at Yale. And there would be families that I would escort families to their patient, like their family member after surgery. And every once in a while, we had to go to the CTICU. Mm-hmm. And I remember escorting this one giant family, Italian family. Like, it was led by, like, the nanny. And I could hear them talking behind me and how nervous they were. And their son just had a valve replacement. And I was like, what am I living here?
Yeah.
And I kind of turned around to them, and I was like, hey, I don't know if this is my place to say anything, but I just want to let you know. Like, I tried to, like, repay the favor. Like, I was like, hey, I just went through, like, I literally just went through this a few months ago. And I can say if I did it, he can do it. And, you know, the nanny came up to me, gave me a hug. She was in tears. And it, the feeling you get from being able to help people like that is just, the, no words can describe that.
Especially because I feel like it's such a select community who actually has that kind of experience. And to have somebody who has been in the shoes of the person going into the OR, it's very rare to have that.
Yeah.
And to not only show that, like, it went all right, but to show how you were able to excel and succeed because of it, I think that is something that nobody else can provide in a setting like that.
Yeah, my surgeon at Boston Children's, phenomenal surgeon, Dr. Del Nido, like, amazing. When I had to go in for my second surgery at Yale, I mean, he saved my life. The surgeon saved my life. But, you know, he would walk into the room to see how I'm doing, and he'd be stripping my chest tubes, and there's, like, there's just no, like, it doesn't feel like any empathy.
Yeah.
It's, like, almost, like, soulless. Like, okay, yeah, it's just another thing I have to get done, move on to the next, and I don't want to do that. Like, I want to be able to see patients and, like, relate to them. Be like, I want to help you because I know what it's like.
Yeah.
So.
I think there's like, this thing that as medical professionals, sometimes we have to do to protect ourselves, where it's, and maybe in surgery in particular, you know, you're working on somebody, you're doing surgery on someone almost as if it's mechanical.
Yeah.
And you're getting in there and you're fixing it, and you kind of separate maybe the human aspect. Like, absolutely, you know, you cover up the whole person except besides the one site.
Yep.
And that's part of the way that you maybe compartmentalize in a way what you're doing,
yeah,
without getting so attached to it. But it sounds like the surgeon you had at Boston Children's was somehow able to bridge this gap, keep this humanity, which is really freaking hard to do.
Yeah.
And this empathy and emotion and the weight of the situation, and then also do what needed to be done mechanically. That's like excellence. And that's like, I mean, that's Boston Children's.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really interesting. That's a really good kind of lesson perspective that you raised there.
Yeah. So after sophomore year, I kind of put my head down, said, okay, still passionate about aerospace, like, let's do this. And I actually really enjoyed undergrad. I enjoyed the classes. Crazy difficult. You know, I was telling
aerospace engineering is difficult. Are you sure?
It is rocket science. I can't say it's not rocket science.
It literally is.
I was telling Jack before, you know, there's some classes I walk into and just, man, I just need to get a 30 on this exam. I walked out of some, I was like, if I got a 30 on that exam, I would be thrilled. And the average was like a 20. I'm like, hell yeah, let's go. Definitely the major itself taught me some, like, gave me some perspective and, I guess, humility. I was like, grades aren't everything. Mm-hmm. Like, my GPA is going to be what it is, but I, you know, worked hard for it, so.
Yeah.
And then I think it was my junior year or my senior year. I did two senior years, right? So my first senior year, maybe. I had talked with a professor in aero. He was an aerospace engineer professor, one that I really liked. I had hopped on a phone call with him one day, and I was like, hey, you know, this is what I'm thinking about doing with my life. Like, I want to go be a doctor. I was like, but Purdue offers this, like, one-year master's program. What do you think about that? And we sat on the phone and talked for an hour, 2 hours, whatever. He goes, it's funny you say you want to be a doctor. He's like, I used to have that dream too. He goes, obviously now I'm here as a professor and whatnot, but my wife is an orthopedic surgeon. And he said, I still stay interested in the medical field and whatnot, and I always try to help where I can with my own research. He did a lot of research in materials. And so we talked about the master's program. I didn't end up doing it. But A little while after that conversation with him, the aerospace department puts out like a weekly newsletter, and I saw something pop up on the newsletter that was like internship opportunities, and it said Harvard Medical, Massachusetts General Hospital internship. And I was like, first of all, what the hell? Like, why is this on an aerospace engineering like opportunity sheet or whatever? And so I looked into it, and sure enough, this professor I had a conversation with did research with this lab. He was one of the authors on some of their papers. He would collaborate because of his knowledge in the types of materials and the type of imaging that this lab was doing. And so when I applied to it and I got the interview, and I was actually on spring break in Miami, so I had to like wake up the next morning.
Oh my God.
Go find a coffee shop. And, like, my PI's name is Hamid. I started talking to Hamid, and he was like, oh yes, like, you know, Professor Tallman said that, you know, he kind of put it up there hoping that you'd see it. I was like,
wow.
It's just crazy how, you know, I said this before, like, things happen for a reason. When I started pursuing medicine, like, things kind of fell into place. Like, you know, things kind of lined up. It just felt a little easier. I mean, I don't know if that's because it's now what I'm passionate about, so things that you're passionate about feel easier, or if it's just truly, like, a calling that I have that I'm supposed to pursue. So I got the internship. That's how I met you guys. And it was just, that was a crazy summer, but...
That's pretty much exactly how we got into the lab too. Yeah, we we cold call emailed like 50 people in Boston, and Sohel is one of the like four that responded. No, that's like crazy to reflect on too, and there is something to be said for maybe it is the just finding a true passion, but when you find something that really is what you want to do with your life, things become a lot easier. Not necessarily easier from like a technical standpoint or from a learning standpoint, but everything feels easier to do.
No, and I mean, I realized that through engineering, and I'm sure you guys have realized that in med school, that like, you know, if you're not actually passionate about what your guys are doing, you're not going to be able to wake up every day come to the hospital and do what you guys need to do. Like,
yeah,
if I wasn't actually passionate about engineering, like I would not have made it through that. Yeah. So yeah, like that passion definitely just makes like it makes it harder to get through that grind.
Yeah. Yeah, it goes to show, and we say this a lot, and I was told this a lot when I was pursuing medicine as an undergraduate. Just like make sure you're getting into it for the right reason. If you're doing this for anything other than a passion for helping people, for the love of the complexity in it, the problem solving, everything like that goes along with that, it's going to be a very, very difficult time.
Yeah.
Like, it's already difficult, but if you don't truly love it, that makes getting up at 4:30 in the morning to go to rounds impossible.
Yeah.
And I know people that got into the field because of the status that you can have when you're done or the money that allegedly comes with it. Not that we've seen anything remotely like that yet. but, like... then they get into medical school and they're like, oh my God, I have to wait 35 years before I have money to spend like that.
Yeah.
And I have to wake up at 4:30 in the morning and like go round on patients all day and stand in the OR for 12 hours at a time and like do all of this stuff. And it only works if you genuinely appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're sacrificing a lot.
Yeah. But it's worth it down the line if that's what you're into. I've already seen it pay off on our end in multiple clinical settings, which is shocking as a third-year medical student. Like, to be able to say that we've actually had impacts on people's lives is, like, wild to reflect on.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. If we had to pull advice from that, like, if you're getting into it for status, stop listening. Stop listening. Turn our podcast off. If you're interested in the money, go investment banking.
Yeah, go.
Turn our podcast off.
Oh, God, yeah. There are so many other ways to make money.
Go do something else. If you love people and reducing suffering and being there for people in a really tough moment, a resident showing her own surgery scar to Josh as he's going through something that's existential, then That's the right thing. That's the right reason.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
And now, like, it's crazy that we're linking up at this time. I texted Josh because something popped into my brain and I was like, it was so weird. It popped into my brain and I was like, I just have this like inkling that I want to reach out to Josh.
And so, you texted me. He texted me on the day I took the MCAT. Now, obviously, when you take the MCAT, you don't have your phone the whole day. So I get into the car at 3:30, and I look at my phone, and I see Jack Wolf. I was like, I have not heard from Jack in, like, I don't know how long it's been. I think the last time we saw each other, we got pizza at Sally's.
Yeah,
that was last winter.
Last winter, maybe?
Yeah, like, so it's been over a year.
It's been over a year. I was like, first of all, crazy that you decided to message me on the day of the MCAT. Yeah. But also, you were like, hey, like, you should totally come up to UConn and see the med school campus and whatnot. And we've been trying to make these plans for,
like, quite a while.
This is my last free day here because I go back up to Boston on Sunday and I have another surgery on Tuesday to, you know, fix me up again.
Is this a re-up on a previous surgery or?
So the valve that they put in when I was 17... is more or less ran its lifespan.
So yeah, it's got like a 5 year
almost. They told me it was supposed to be like 8 to 10 years.
Oh wow.
And now what are we, 5-6 years?
Yeah.
And it's like I got that news back in the fall this year and I was kind of disheartened to hear. It was a surprise. Yeah. It was like this is not the right time for this. Yeah. Like at all. Because, you know, I want to apply to med school this cycle, and I have the MCAT coming up, and it's like, where does this fit in the picture? I was like, okay, well, I have to take the MCAT now. I can't postpone it. Like, there's no excuse. And then I have to go into surgery. I have to recover, and I have to get my application in. Like, this is what's going to happen. This is what has to happen.
Yeah.
But they have to... I have an option of what I want done, which feels like I was telling Jack earlier, my first like adult decision that's going to affect a large part of my life.
Yeah.
Like, do I get this procedure done where they just replace the valve, or do I get this other procedure done where they, you know, jockey around my healthy valve and they put it in my aortic valve and take valves from a cadaver? And I don't know. So I have to make that decision in like 2 days.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, so I decided to do this.
I am leaning towards one, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
I scheduled my MCAT based on studying when I thought I'd feel prepared. You had to decide based on when you're going to get heart surgery.
We're in slightly different boats here.
when I was a senior, like my second senior year, rather... I was like, okay, I'll take the MCAT in May after I graduate.
Right.
I'll study my final semester, like, during the semester, and then I'll take the MCAT. And so when I graduated, I never really had that, like, celebratory phase of, like, I'm done. Mm. Like, this is amazing. I kind of, like, graduated. I was like, okay, continue studying.
Next step.
Nice. Yep. And, like, I got closer and closer to that date. I was like, you know, I'm not ready for this test. And so I postponed it. And I ended up postponing it a couple times. And I would talk with my friends who have already taken the exam. And I was like, hey, like, what do you think I should do? And they're like, there's no shame in postponing your test.
Absolutely. Just,
if you're not ready, you're not ready. Postpone it. But you don't want to kind of fall into the cycle of, like, lollygagging and then not taking it.
Right.
So this surgery was kind of like the hard wall of, like, all right, you're either going to get it done or you're not. So, yeah.
This is just so crazy. I remember how much I would complain about having to schedule my MCAT and like have to fit everything in, and then you hear a story like that and I'm just like, man, I was complaining for not that much. Like, I was complaining because I had to take it at 6:30 p.m. Like, I think I could deal with that.
No, I think I'm going to write the AMC a letter like, hey, if I get a bad score on this, it's because of it.
Yeah, you can't
give me a bad
score. I'm going to be in recovery. You cannot give me a bad score right now.
Your score might actually stop my heart.
Oh, my goodness.
They might hear this.
Yeah. We have so many listeners that.
So my user ID on AM.
No, seriously, if any residency, nope, if any medical schools are listening, I'm so used to saying residencies at this point for us.
That too.
If any too. Anyone in the medical world is listening right now, Josh Norton has our full support for getting into a medical school. This man deserves it. He's a hard working dude. And he's going to be brilliant. He's so qualified.
Able.
And total 180 here. Did you do marching band as well in college?
Yeah, I feel like we didn't elaborate on that.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about that much.
No, we didn't. We didn't.
But I was thinking of, like, qualified things that I would bring up. And, like, people don't realize marching band is unbelievably in-depth in college.
You went to, Clemson?
Right? Yeah.
So, I mean, the South very similar. Has a very good marching band culture. Like I said, I grew up all my life here in Connecticut.
Yeah.
And I started playing the saxophone when I was in fourth grade. I wanted to play, I think it was either the trombone or the drums. And
you can't really do the drums on a marching band. I guess you can do like the, right? Bigger one, but.
My goal was never a marching band. I mean, I was fourth grade. I just wanted to play an instrument. My parents came back to me. They're like, look, your great grandfather has a saxophone, a clarinet, and a trumpet in his basement. Pick one of those. Because we're not buying you an instrument. We don't know if you're going to stay with it.
Put your mouth where your great-grandfather put his mouth, okay?
So I just...
Oh, no!
I got a new mouthpiece, okay?
Yeah, it's perfect. We don't even have to buy a mouthpiece. He has one ready for you.
The reed's perfect condition from the 1940s or whatever. No, I opened that case, and man, that thing smelled like... No, so I started playing in fourth grade, and I think every stage of my life, I was like, I'm gonna quit. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, no. Like, I actually enjoy this. And so the transition came from high school to college. I was like, I'm not gonna play in college. And then I went and saw Purdue, and then I started, like, just curiosity, like, searched, and they have a crazy good marching band.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Just insanely, oh. So I was like, well, I might as well try. I had to audition for the marching band. Not audition like, oh, go play some pieces. Like, it was a week long. Like,
yeah.
You can get cut.
Yeah, it's like it's legitimately, people don't realize, it is like walking onto a Division I team.
I had a friend who was recruited to play D1 baseball.
Yeah.
And he chose to do marching band. And he would say, like, you know, I get my exercise in here. Like, it's hard. And so you can get cut from marching band. And on top of that, if you don't perform well, you can get benched next week.
That's crazy.
Oh my goodness.
And so this
imagine
was
riding pine for the
for the, like, marching
for the marching band.
It sounds crazy, cause, yeah, but like,
no, like, it's true, though.
That's the culture, and
yeah,
I loved it. Like, it was so rewarding to me, especially after, this was right after heart surgery. I graduated high school, and, you know, what was it, March, April, May, June, July, August, 5 months later, I'm rigorously auditioning for the marching band.
Oh my God.
And that first game, wearing that uniform on that field, was like, I lived and I got to see this.
Yeah.
Like, this is beautiful.
Yeah.
And so I stuck with it all 5 years. I got to go to Ireland for it. Got to march in St. Patrick's Day Parade in Dublin.
Oh, my goodness.
Got to go to the Nashville bowl game, like, twice. Got to go to Orlando for a bowl game. Yep. It was, yeah. We beat Ohio State. Like, that was
crazy.
That's a core memory for me.
I would have broke my saxophone.
Yeah.
In celebration.
100%.
No, that game actually, that was during when I was struggling a little bit in college, which is like, what do I want to do?
Yeah.
And at Purdue, there's a student. His name was Tyler Trent, and he had terminal cancer. And he was probably Purdue's biggest fan.
Yeah.
The biggest fan. He would camp outside of the stadium day before game.
Yeah.
And Purdue is, I love them, but they're not like some powerhouse school of a football team. You know, they'll win here, they'll lose here, and it just makes no sense. But before that Ohio State game, he basically said, like, we're going to win this game. And Ohio State was number 2 in the country at the time, and everyone's like... Like, God, like, we would love that for him.
Yeah.
And he was, like, honorary captain.
I was going to say, I remember seeing a lot of those videos of Tyler.
And, you know, we scored our first touchdown, and Ohio State didn't. and then we scored more, and everybody kind of just held their breath that entire game. And we, like, even it was like 3 seconds left on the clock, and we're up like 49-20, and we're like, this can't be.
Something isn't right.
And we won. And it was, like, I remember I got on the phone with my mom after, and she goes, you know, yeah, that's just, like, that's beautiful. Yeah. Like, that's, this, you know, Tyler had faith.
Yeah.
And, you know, he ended up passing away later, but.
Yeah.
Think about, like, what belief can do.
Like, truly.
Jeez.
So that was, like, to me, like, you know, I'm here, so.
Yeah, oh my gosh. That's crazy.
And as, like, part of the marching, were you in the marching band at that time, too?
Yeah.
So, like, being a part of that, you were literally, like, a part of that game, too.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I remember walking past some of the marching band practices on, like, my first or second week freshman year at Clemson, and I was like, what is going on? It was, you could hear it from miles away, and they did not take a break for like 4 hours.
Yeah, no, it was 20-hour weeks.
It is an absolute grind, and I don't think I appreciated that until later in my collegiate career, honestly.
Yeah.
I say collegiate career like I was a player or something. Like
a collegiate career of studying.
Yeah.
No, and in that game, we actually, there's a website, collegemarching.com, I think. They came to Purdue to do like a little documentary. They were going around the country doing documentaries of different marching bands, but they so happened to be there. And there's like a YouTube video out, like 20-minute YouTube video of just Purdue marching band against Ohio State. And it's crazy. Like, it's crazy that they got that's the game they came to.
Yeah, that is so perfect. Oh, I love when stuff lines up like that. Sometimes things just fall into place.
I think they fell into place for Tyler that day.
Yeah, that is incredible. That's such a good story. I remember seeing just everything about Tyler online. And I didn't even think to, like, kind of bring that up to you that you were probably a part of that situation. That's incredible. I was following that a good bit when it was happening. I remember being very moved by that. There are so many, like, incredible things that come out of sports, and I feel like stories like that are just mind-blowing. It's so beautiful, truly. And I'm so jealous that you got to be there for that.
Wow.
And to be a part of that, truly.
Yeah. Unranked Purdue is a force to be reckoned with.
Purdue. Yeah, number one Purdue basketball, though, is not a force to be reckoned with.
Look, we're better than number two. See, UConn can have number one for now.
Oh, my goodness. I remember texting you. I didn't even want to text you after that game. I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Luckily, I was in Dublin when that happened.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we just.
Oh, I remember that.
We just took part in the culture over there.
Of course. Like, yes, yes.
Another one, please.
I simply said another one.
I think my friend and I went up to the bar, and we were like, two shots. And we looked at each other. We looked at the score. We looked at the game.
Yeah,
like,
add another.
Add two more.
what a beautiful place to be upset. You know, if I had to,
you know, I think I would have been more upset if I wasn't. Like, it's hard to be upset.
Exactly. If I had to see my team lose like that, if I were in Dublin, that would make everything a little bit better.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Dublin?
No, I've been to Ireland once. For family stuff, super Irish, of course. But I was like in Galway.
Galway, yeah, I loved Galway.
Yeah,
it was so like
green.
It's like it was like everything you would think of when you think of Ireland.
It's Ireland.
It was like I didn't know this existed. Like I see places in Boston that try to mimic it.
Cliffs of Moher have your brain like absolutely exploded just looking at the cliffs.
I can survive that, you know. This would be a great place to cliff dive.
It was someone had a picture of that, and they were like, does anyone want to meet here for a sword battle, like, at dusk?
Like, it's honestly, cinematic.
Yeah, it's unbelievably
cinematic. It's like a legendary, like, spot to just exist.
Yeah.
I remember we sat there, we walked away from the group, and we just sat there, like, obviously not, like, over the ledge, because...
Yeah, not worth it.
But, like, just staring. It's like... It's crazy. It exists.
Oh, my God.
That's one thing I started doing in college that I want to keep doing is just traveling and seeing new places.
Yeah. Which we were talking about that a little bit. There's a pretty common, almost call it a misconception at this point, that you have no time to do anything when you're in medical school. And we've gotten a chance to travel way more than I would have anticipated.
Yeah.
During these 3 years so far.
Stay organized and take care of your stuff. And
yeah, as long as you keep it a priority and...
Well, that was my initial stigma. I was like, oh, if I go to med school, I'm not going to have time to do anything. But I started thinking it as more of like, okay, I graduated college. I'm starting my life.
Yeah.
Med school is just my full-time job.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a week here to do something.
Yeah.
Take a vacation.
Yeah, so, exactly. And, like, looking back, I don't really understand the, like, wasting your 20s. Like, oh, I don't want to waste my 20s in medical school. Like... you're going to be working no matter what it is, right? Unless you are fortunate to have money to travel all the time.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's in a very similar boat.
Yeah.
We still get time off. We have enough, like, government loan money to live an okay life. Like, I'm not seeing anything that we've missed out on being here.
Right. One of my biggest concerns, like, going into all this is, like, oh, like, I don't get to live my life until I'm 35 or whatever. You know, like, I want to go to this very niche residency and everything. But I say to myself, like, okay, if I took my job offer wherever, you know, at Lockheed or whatever, I would still be working when I'm 35.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to get to that point in my life anyways, so I might as well be doing something that I'm passionate about to do.
Yeah. Also, as a working professional, like, I feel like they give up just as much time as we do in a lot of ways, aside from, like, weekends and having a normal, like, work schedule.
Yeah.
They get, like, maybe a month of vacation time. We get a month of vacation time. Yeah. Well, 2 weeks now. But, like, it really depends. Like, we're not, I feel like, missing out on as much as I would have expected coming into this.
No.
And, like, I kind of miss learning a little bit. Yeah. I've been out of school for... I don't know, what is it, 9 months now?
Yeah.
And the other day I was sitting there, I was like, I kind of miss going to class and learning. I don't miss the exam. I don't miss the homework, don't get me wrong. But I miss just, like, being curious about something and, like, learning new information about it.
Always improving.
And it's like, you know, you could just buy a book and start reading, I guess, on your free time. But there's something that's kind of nice about having someone, like, kind of kick you to go, like, hey, you got to get this done.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. And you definitely do that in medical school.
And like, the resources are given to you. Like, it's a lot easier to walk in here. Like, you're showing me the labs and stuff. Like, okay, I have a place to learn.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They help kind of centralize everything into one learning area.
Yep.
Which, yeah, that's what we have Josh here. Just not only to hang out, and this podcast was actually a complete afterthought, but just here to tour the kind of facilities.
I remember the starts of this podcast.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you were there through all of the plan. How different is it now?
The first podcast was like, there was like camera set up, there was like a microphone. Now we're huddled in a corner around a phone.
Which I honestly, like, I love this so much more because I think we were doing way too much at the beginning.
We were doing a lot.
And it wasn't as authentic.
In a way, it should have been the other way around.
100%.
At this point, it should be more professional.
Oh, yeah. 100%. But I also think it comes down to, like, we don't have as much time as we had all summer to set all that stuff up. Now it's like, all right, let's get together for an hour.
We always weren't in the same place. You guys were downstairs, and we were, or, like, my research group, because you were on the foot and ankle side. Yep. We were on more, like, my research group was... more like engineering and machine learning.
Yeah.
But you guys were downstairs and we'd always look at each other like, have you guys seen Jack and Riley today? And people would be like, no, they're just in the dungeon. Like, you guys stayed in the basement, no windows, just these artificial lights for like 8 hours.
We really did. We did. Like,
just adapted to like being hermits.
Well, the craziest part, we were reflecting on like inviting these huge name MGH professionals to come to this dungeon downstairs basement, and they would just show up, no questions asked. Like, the people that we interviewed were Unbelievable.
Like, at the top of their field.
Keep in mind, this wasn't, like, a traditional lab setting. This was... No, I remember my first day at this lab. This is, like, a house. I walked into that house with Liz, and the first thing we were showed was, like, this freezer of cadavers in the living room. Or, like, in, like, the closet.
Yeah.
Like, there's just dead bodies, literally, in the closet.
Yeah. It is unbelievable that, like, I can only imagine, because I didn't think about it at the time, but imagine what they were thinking of when they just pulled up. They had never met us before. They responded to a cold call email that we sent them and were just like, yeah, sure, I'd love to come be on your podcast. They show up in this driveway of 8 cars, crammed in there, walk into a random old house.
It's actually so crazy.
It is unbelievable.
What happens?
All right, we have...
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And that, no, we apparently reached our recording limit. So restart the whole episode.
Okay.
No.
My name's John.
Damn it. Restart it.
That's not my name.
we were saying, like, having these people on the podcast is so surreal because they are so busy, and all we did was sit in the basement and play around with, like, video cameras and microphones all day, and they were like, yeah, we can make time.
Isn't that crazy? Like, I feel like we all, that summer, just sat there and played around, and then Liz and I went out and won an award for our playing around.
Yeah. Well, your playing around was cool as hell. Like, you guys made some pretty unbelievable products.
Liz and I think, sat there for a week and was just like, wow, a 3D printer. Let's print something.
Do you remember when I broke one of the prototypes?
You felt so bad. And Liz and I looked at each other and were like, whatever.
I haven't felt that bad in a long time because they had, like, 3D printed this unbelievable, am I allowed to talk about it, or is it, like, a patented thing?
You know, there is, like, a patent pending.
Okay, so we won't say exactly what it is.
At least Hamid said that there's a patent somewhere out there. Yeah. I don't know if it's gotten approved.
It's a really cool piece of imaging technology.
I've talked about it. I've presented it to a group of people, so I don't...
Yeah, but that's, like, professional.
I think the part just we can't talk about...
Trust us.
Is, like, the machine learning part of it.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, like, it's a band, and it's an imaging that comes in a band form.
Yeah.
And I was, like... I don't even know why. I was, like, sitting there, like, kind of playing with the band, like, swinging around my finger, and it just popped and broke. I had to go upstairs and present it to the two of them who had worked for, like, a week on this thing. And just be like, hey, guys.
It was like a little kid, like, apologizing for his wrongdoings.
It's 100% what it was.
Oh, like, my God.
I was like, guys.
I think I told you, I was like, oh, yeah. Liz and I know that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
It was really hard because we had prototyped this thing for, like, 2 weeks. Like,
yeah.
Liz and I grinded for 2 weeks, regardless of all the fun we had. The first 2 weeks, I think it was before you guys got there, so it's your guys' fault.
Yeah.
That we stopped working so hard.
Yeah, you're welcome.
No, but for 2 weeks,
more fun.
We prototyped and we printed all these cuffs, and, you know, every once in a while one would break because the material they use, and then when you cure it with the UV,
yeah,
it makes it a little bit brittle. And then you just snapped it. And you felt so bad.
Yeah. That wasn't a finer moment of mine.
And I were like, well, I guess we'll print another one.
In a way, you guys are welcome for proving a flaw in the system.
Nice.
As an engineer, right? From the engineering perspective, great job.
Exactly. Thank you. For all the engineers out there, if you need me to check out your device...
I want to see if it's breakable.
Probably find a breakable point. Oh. We were talking a little bit during the off segment of this when we were waiting for it to load.
Yeah.
What were we talking about?
The transplant surgeon?
Yeah, we were talking about the transplant surgeon.
That you guys you know,
just felt terrible now looking back.
Yeah,
somebody who's literally on call their whole life and doing all this research to improve healthcare and working 80-hour weeks, and we were like, hey, do you want to come record a podcast episode in the basement of this house? And she said yes. Like, why did she say yes to that? She's incredible. I honestly feel a little bit bad, but I'm very happy that we had her. She's an unbelievable interview and an unbelievable human. Cool.
I think it would be a good idea for us to reach out to everybody again now that we've, like, blown up.
Yeah. And just be like, hey, guys, thanks again.
Thanks for trusting us when we didn't even have a product yet.
Seriously.
Yeah.
They showed so much faith in us. Yeah, wow. Truthfully, let's do that this week at some point. That's a good idea.
Cool.
Josh, anything else, my friend? Any pitches to medical schools? Because all of them are listening right now.
All of them?
All of them.
Take me.
You guys heard it. You heard it. Take the man.
I think they should.
Jack and I were talking about this before you got here, too. It's like this mountain that you've been talking about climbing for so long.
Yeah.
And, like, that's how the MCAT has felt to me. It's like, I've been talking about doing the MCAT for a while, like, you know, sophomore year of college. And then it finally happened one day, and I was like, oh, this is happening.
Yeah.
This was happening, and now it has happened. I did that.
Yeah.
Like, and Jack was saying the same thing about, like, residency. Like, you know, it's coming up, and at some point it's just going to – now it is.
I still remember in, like, 6th and 7th grade, all of my passwords were, like, Riley.17 because 17 was the year that I was graduating high school. And that's, like, what they gave to everyone in their school. And that number 17 sounded like the most far-fetched number in the world for so long in my life. And then you hit it, and now it's 2024. And now I'm thinking, like, 25 is when we graduate medical school, which, again, is a number that is just used to be unfathomable.
Yeah.
I didn't even know if I'd survive this long. And, like, and then you talk about residency, and you're like, okay, 5 to 7 years of residency. You've been talking about this for so long, and I'm assuming it's probably going to end up the same way, where it's gone in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
And it is just wild to sit down and kind of, like, think through all these things that we've been through, because you really do get swept up in it when you're going through it a lot of the time.
It feels like yesterday that I would stumble down into your guys' dungeon and be like, what are you guys doing with those cameras? But you guys were you just finished your first year in med school.
Oh, and now it's gosh. Like,
so where are you going to residency?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I had no idea what I was doing with my life then. Well, I guess I had some idea. I was in medical school. But, like, truthfully, I had no idea which direction I wanted to go. It's so crazy to think of everything that we've been through. We took step.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the time since we saw you last.
Yeah.
We took step one.
You guys are still alive.
Yeah, we made it over that second mountain. That's another mountain that we've been talking about for so long.
But that's what the med school acceptance feels like right now. It's like,
yeah.
You know, that's the next mountain. Step.
Yep.
I just think it's important to...
There's always going to be another mountain.
There's always going to be another thing.
I'm going to want to make it move.
Oh,
it's always going to be an uphill battle.
There you go.
Sometimes you're going to have to lose.
Shout out. No, I literally remember being like, just I will be happy and, like, content if I get into medical school. And that lasts for one day. And then you're like, what's next?
Yep.
What's the next thing that I'm going to focus on, I'm going to worry about, that I'm going to obsess over, that I'm going to grind for? And that's just kind of how it goes.
You can't rob yourself of your own happiness, though.
Yeah.
You know, of course.
You got to appreciate.
I think that is part of the takeaway here is, like, acknowledge those milestones when they happen, because it's so easy to be like, all right, what's next? And you really got to take a second to think, like, man, I've been waiting for this moment right now for so long. I might as well bask in it for a little bit, right? Yeah. I was fortunate. The day I got accepted to UConn, I was in Hawaii on that road trip.
Driving your Lambo, right?
Yeah. No, it was just me and, like, my best friend. I took a cross-country road trip. We stopped in L.A. and we flew to Hawaii. This was, like, our... before getting into serious world yeah. last blowout trip. And so we're in Hawaii. I go and I take a nap at like 2 p.m. And right before I go to sleep for the nap, I got an email from UConn. But this is at the time I had already reapplied to schools. So I was on the wait list. And I was starting to get secondary applications back from all of the new schools again. So I was like, damn, it's another secondary application that I have to fill out. So I just turned my phone off, went to sleep. Like 2 hours later, woke up, checked it. It was an acceptance email instead. I started like freaking out. So then we went out, we just got a drink, and we met these random people there that were like, oh, congratulations, let's buy more drinks. So like, and then we got a text from a like completely third party guy that lives there. It was like my friend's boss's cousin who lived out there, and we had just like taken the number in case anything happened or we needed anything. He randomly texted us and said, by the way, we have a table at this club if you guys want to come for the night, like totally randomly, all expenses paid. And we were like,
yep.
I was like, this might be the best day ever. And so like I was fortunate to be able to celebrate like in that yep. time. But you're right, like after it happened, like 2-3 days later, I was just focused on the next thing. And yeah. that next thing was how to get home from Oregon after we hit the deer. But that's a different story.
Bad day to be a deer.
Bad day to be a deer.
That is such a good takeaway, though. And it's something I forget to do a lot, honestly, is like...
Be in the moment.
Be in the moment. Man, because there's always something that's coming next. You just got to remember that.
Hell yeah.
All right.
Change the podcast name to Philosophical Views with
Corner well, Conversations.
We'll just have, yeah, the Corner Podcast. Every time Josh comes on, we'll just get a little bit more philosophical. So next time, we'll talk a little bit more in depth about ancient philosophy. We'll get into Socrates.
Socrates.
I think, or I am. I don't know, actually, don't know
yeah,
who
said that.
I think that's Descartes. Rene Descartes. Anyway.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah. All right, if you've stuck around this long, thanks for continuing to listen and continue to support us. If you'd like to hear more stuff from like patients, and especially Josh, we'll be always in touch with Josh. Josh is always welcome to
yeah, just drive up to the hospital next week. Just, hey, I know you're taking morphine right now, but you want to...
Can I see your scar?
Honestly, that would be a sweet video idea.
That'd be cool.
Just
look at this man.
Josh morphined out on the bed.
I'm happy.
Yeah. No, seriously, as always, shoot us an email, any content suggestions, anything that you've appreciated, anything that you think we could do better, let us know. I got nothing. Jack?
That's it for me.
Josh?
I'm here.
He's here.
Always here.
He's here. We'll have him back on at some point. And everybody, wish Josh luck next week.
Thank you.
All right.
Tagline?
Stay right side up.
Stay right side up.
SRSU, see? I like our podcast so much, I got it tatted on me.
Stay right side up.
SRSU. Right on the wrist. It definitely has no other meaning. It was just for the podcast.
All right.
Arrivederci.
Bye.